We had a wild game one to begin the NBA Finals with the Celtics taking the first game on the Warriors floor. How did the Celtics out-Warriors the Warriors, and what does this mean for the series going forward? All of that and more coming up next.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily podcast covering the NBA. However you may be tuning in, YouTube, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts, thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with Brendan Kleen. The Celtics take game one of the finals, coming back from 15 down to start the fourth quarter to do it. A 40-16 fourth quarter by the Celtics, turning the water off on the Warriors' offense and pouring in 9 threes to close out the game. It's a 120-108 win for the Celtics. Big games from Al Horford, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Steph Curry with a game-high 34 points, but did not have enough help. Where do we want to start with this, Brandon?
That fourth quarter, I feel like, is really going to be the story. It was one of those games where Boston, they never were out of it, right? Golden State obviously started off with a lead, and Steph had, 15, 18 points in the first quarter, whatever it was. Kind of very much felt like Steph had heard all of the legacy chatter and decided to come out strong, and the Celtics had no answer for that. But by the end of the game, it was like, okay, the Celtics have stayed close, but also the Warriors have kept their lead. So is that just going to be the story of this game? Then things switch in an instant. The Celtics hit their first 7 threes in the fourth quarter. And like you said, the water was turned off. Steph and the Warriors were getting shots to open the fourth. They were making shots, but it was one of those things, as you said, out-Warriorsing the Warriors. It very much felt that way because in this case, it was Golden State trading twos for threes. The Celtics were just bombing away from deep, and Golden State just, getting mid-range shots and, weird broken plays and things like that. And then eventually that ran out, and the Celtics did not slow down, and they turned it on 40-16. That is insane.
There was a lot of conversation going into this game about whether or not Boston's defense could handle the novelty of Golden State's offense after going through the mud against Milwaukee and Miami. Could they handle the fast-paced ball movement, off-ball movement, movement all the time offense for the Warriors? And in that fourth quarter, the first quarter, it didn't look like the Celtics had anything figured out. In fact, Marcus Smart was mic'd up on the broadcast saying, hey, we can't play this like it's the Miami series. We have to be up on their shooters, et cetera, and all these things. Which you would have thought that they would have figured out scouting the opponent, but whatever. In the first quarter, they look completely out of sorts. But it was interesting to watch Boston's defense sort of figure it out as the game went on. A lot of people were ragging on like the drop defense that they were playing, and they had to make some tweaks, have Robert Williams come out a little bit more depending on the switches and the matchups and stuff. But they figured it out. They figured it out, and by the end of the game, they had the Warriors taking the shots that they wanted to give the Warriors. And in the half court, they completely shut them down per cleaning the glass. Golden State scored just 89 points per 100 plays in the half court. That's awful. That is terrible. And you got to give all of the credit, all of it, I think, to the Celtics defense. The Warriors obviously missed some makeable looks, but everybody misses makeable looks in over the course of any game. But I really think most of the credit, if not all the credit, has to go to Boston's defense, just figuring it out as the game went on.
Absolutely. You mentioned, too, Robert Williams. And not to say that, taking him off the court was just this magic chess move that won the game. I don't want to, put too much dirt on him at all, but he didn't play really in the fourth quarter. And that was a big part of this too, in terms of the mobility, in terms of the, just flexibility that you have to have. It wasn't just the drop defense against Steph in that first quarter. It was also just the guards not fighting through the screens the way that they needed to. It was just Steph having space, and both of the pick and roll defenders get blamed for that. So, closing the game as Ime Udoka did with Tatum, Brown, Horford, Smart, and Derek White, I think, was a really nice chess move. I wonder, people had talked about prior to the series and their previews and everything else. I tried to read as many as I could. Like, do we see Boston just actually start Horford at center and bring Robert Williams off the bench? Maybe you win the game. Maybe you're not the team that needs to adjust. But it felt like by the end of this that Udoka had figured that part out, and it was just easier to fight over, easier to guard the way that they wanted to when they had their more versatile, flexible, mobile lineups out there. And it obviously, again, it doesn't hurt when you make all of your threes or just about in that fourth quarter. It's much easier to maintain and take the lead once you are just completely on fire on your offensive end as well.
Yeah, I didn't know who I was picking going into this series. I just felt like really good about it probably going seven. And I think I would have probably leaned Warriors if I forced myself to make an official pick. But one of the big question marks I thought for the Celtics going into this was how do you solve all of the questions, all the problems that Golden State poses for you, right? And it just felt like ultimately the Warriors had the upper hand in, hey, you have to solve for us. We don't have to solve for you. But to your point, like the Celtics kind of figured it out by the end of game one, like what they wanted to close with. Now, I'm not going to say that they figured it out for the whole series, but it's just interesting now that it feels like they have the high ground going into game two, right? They stole a game. They stole home court. In Chase Center, they closed with that lineup. That was really good. And then Steve Kerr at the end of the game, like on the other side of that, kind of felt like he wasn't really sure how he wanted to close. There was Andre Iguodala for a little bit, and then they couldn't score for the first 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. And so he leans offense with Steph, Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson, Wiggins, and Green, which I thought was interesting, taking Kevon Looney off the floor, considering how good he played in the game, but like he's just not an offensive threat at all. And so you put all your your scorers in the game, and then like Boston's lead only grew from there because you couldn't defend them. And Marcus Smart makes back-to-back threes. Al Horford makes back-to-back threes. And all of a sudden, Boston's lead balloons. So it feels like right now the Celtics are the team that needs to be figured out. And now it's sort of on the Warriors and that coaching staff and those vets to figure out the Celtics, because I don't think that they were ready for how much length Boston had in this game. Like they tried to do all their stuff where they were driving, all the off-ball movement. And it just seemed to me that they were sometimes surprised by just how quickly Boston's lengthy defenders, specifically like Jalen Brown, Robert Williams, Al Horford, Grant Williams, even Marcus Smart, how quickly they just closed out, even at the rim, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned, we should probably spend some time on the fact that Tatum did not play well at all in this game. Maybe we can do that in the next segment. But in terms of the size and the length, yeah, you had Jaylen Brown really in that fourth quarter being the one who kept the Celtics afloat. It was him, and then it became the shooting, and then it was Horford and White. But without Brown doing what he did and just making tough shots, getting the shots that the Celtics offense really needed in that moment, five assists for him as well tonight, they wouldn't have been where they were. And then on the other side, you had Jordan Poole, who you mentioned they went with at times in the fourth quarter, 2 of 7 from the field. And it feels like, you know, understandable in a way that Iguodala did get some of that time. I actually thought he was fine. He got, I believe he made one basket in the fourth quarter, had at least one assist. Yeah. Defensively, I think that's actually the area where you maybe worry about him the most, just because, you know, already the Celtics had the youth advantage, the athleticism advantage. They're the younger team in this series. And then having Iguodala be the guy chasing Brown or Tatum around doesn't feel awesome. And then Poole just, if he's not making shots, if he's not creating offense for himself or his teammates, we already know that's a losing proposition. It felt somewhat like the Warriors ran out of guys at the end. You know, you can go, they really ended up going with Porter as that fifth, and that was their closing lineup. They got to Porter. Actually, I think Wiggins was the guy who was off the court at the beginning. Maybe they just go straight to that sort of Porter small ball lineup to start the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. or maybe to start the game. I don't know. Going forward, that seems like their best five right now. But yeah, I mean, Boston having options. They were also able to just like play Peyton Pritchard in this game, because the Warriors are not a team who's going to attack that. It's this unique matchup where we've always thought of the Warriors as this you know, monster in terms of versatility, wing depth, etc. And it's kind of like they've met their match. It's part of why this series was predicted to be so awesome. I think this game kind of showed that, and I hope it continues, but Boston seems to have that advantage.
Yeah, and a couple other bellwethers too. Boston winning the turnover battle, right? 12 turnovers to Golden State's 14. I thought the pace actually wasn't as big of an issue for the Celtics. That to me is one of my big takeaways, is like, oh yeah, they can actually play this way. And obviously it helps when they make threes. I mean, what was their percentage? It felt like it was like 1,000%. They shot 51%, 51.2% on threes, 21 of 41. And if you're a Warriors fan, you might say, hey, like, that's not going to happen again. But also, if you're a Warriors fan, you got to be like, hey, you got to guard those guys better, because those were wide open shots. And it didn't feel like the Warriors knew where the threes were coming from. And that's, again, it goes back to that solvable thing where the Warriors, I'm not saying they're solvable, but you kind of know that they're trying to get the threes to come from Steph, Clay, and Jordan Poole. With the Celtics, it was like, oh my God, Al Horford's making threes from everywhere along the perimeter. Now it's Marcus Smart over here. Yep. It's Jaylen Brown over here now. It just felt like it was coming from a lot of different areas. Derek White, for God's sakes, like, it was just coming from a lot of different areas, and it felt like the Warriors didn't really know what to do. Let's take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back and talk about what you like from the Celtics, what you don't like from the Celtics, and ditto for the Warriors. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. We've been asking, and Built has delivered. Built granola bars, finally, they're here. Built granola bars come in three unbelievable flavors: chocolate peanut butter, chocolate coconut, and white chocolate berry. If you want to try all three flavors, you can get a mixed box at Built.com right now. They're so different from the bars and the puffs. Built granola bars are loaded with, well, granola. It's the perfect combination of crunch and chewiness, but just like the bars and the puffs, these babies are packed with protein and covered in 100% real chocolate. 150 calories, 15 grams of protein, only 4 grams of sugar. Built granola bars will change your world. Built has cracked the code to better granola. They're the perfect healthy snack to pack in your lunch, take on the road, or eat as a snack. And they're made with the collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently, provides tons of health benefits. So if you've been waiting for a healthy and delicious granola bar to hit the market, well, this is your time. Head to Built.com right now to get the Built granola bars. Three delicious flavors: chocolate peanut butter, chocolate coconut, white chocolate berry. Don't miss out. You got to get yours today. Do it at Built.com to get the Built granola bars now. Built.com. Use that promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Again, that's the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. We have an important favor to ask of you. We've put together a survey so we can learn more about the listeners like you and make sure that your favorite Locked On podcasts get even better. This is your opportunity to tell us what you like and don't like about Locked On Podcasts. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey right now to get started. It won't take very long. Everyone that completes a survey can qualify for a chance to win a one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards. And it's concert season is coming up, guys. Take our audience survey to go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey. We really appreciate your help. Speaking of likes and don't likes, Brendan, let's start with the Warriors here. What did you like if you had to find something from the Warriors? What did you not like? Let's start with the likes.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting, I mean, obviously Steph being able to get going offensively. I think there was an understanding or an expectation maybe that Smart was just going to be able to not neutralize Steph Curry, because that's not a thing you really do, but contain him. You know, that Smart was one of these guys who had success against Steph Curry and was going to be able to keep it that way. And that's not what happened. So I think you have to be pretty pleased with that. I think you have to be pretty pleased with the fact that most of the other players on this team didn't really score the ball too well, and yet you were in it, right? That, you know, most of the game it was Steph and, you know, role player threes, and even then not a ton, and that you were still right there. I think that's probably the biggest positive you can have. I don't feel like much of what they were doing defensively I'm gonna, you know, wanna transport over to the game two game plan by any means.
Yeah, I mean, Kevon Looney, especially in that first half, it just felt like he was part of the group, you know, and could play in this series. And I think that was a big thing, is like, you needed Kevon Looney, if you're the Warriors, you needed Kevon Looney to basically be in that same stratosphere with the Robert Williams, the Al Horford, Grant Williams. Like, he needed to be right there with them and had to do a lot of work keeping those guys off the boards and out of the paint. And I thought he did a really good job. His offensive rebounds, 6 offensive rebounds, I'm going to just guess all of them led to points for his team. Like, he would just kick them out, and then the Celtics would have to do that whole, like, okay, reset. Oh, no, it's too late. The Warriors have already scored. So I thought Looney was really good. I thought Otto Porter, you know, I thought he gave you some good contributions. But overall, yeah, I mean, it's just that Steph is this guy, and he was the best player on the floor. And if you have the best player on the floor, you have a chance to win this series. I just think just because you're down 0-1 doesn't mean that you're out of the series. And if you lose home court advantage here, doesn't mean anything, right? This is going to be a long series. And if Steph is going to be playing like this, he's going to give you the chance. And I don't know that I necessarily think any different about this series, right? If Steph is going to be playing like that. In fact, you probably like the Warriors' chances even more if he's playing like that. So that's what I like. What I don't like is that they just gave up that fourth quarter lead. I don't know that we've even talked enough about that. They were up 15 to start that fourth quarter. The Celtics go on that huge run to start the fourth quarter, and it just never really felt like the Warriors could get back into it. And if they're going to be knocked out of their game and they're going to be basically turned into a jump shooting team, that's going to be a problem, right? And I think most people think of the Warriors as just a jump shooting team, but to me, like, the Warriors, their strength is when they use that outside jump shooting to open up all the stuff in the middle, like to open up the paint, open up the drives, open up the backdoor cuts and all that stuff. And the Celtics took all of that away. And I think they were pretty happy to just kind of let them take threes. They took 45 threes, the Warriors did. They made 42% of them. That's a really good rate. They just, outside of the second chance points off of the offensive rebounds, there wasn't really much going on in the paint for them. And I think the Celtics will live that with that going forward.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I almost feel like I'm a head coach where they give you the answer post game of like, I got to go back and watch the film. But it is so bizarre that the Warriors' offense dried up the way that it did. I did find myself watching that game, that quarter, feeling like, you know, Klay's not getting the amount of shots that you want, right? And you know, you look back at the just box score sort of hawking, and it's like 14 attempts. Third most on the team, you know, significantly behind Steph, but he played one more minute than Steph. He basically was out there just as much. That's one thing where, you know, zero free throw attempts. I know it's this sort of recovering from injury version of Klay. I don't necessarily expect him to just barrel into the paint 25 times, but that's probably something you go back and you say, okay, we got to get Klay involved in some way. Maybe that's pushing the pace and finding him in transition. Maybe that's just a couple more set plays here and there for him. Things like that. It's harder to run.
I would have actually liked to see them everything. Like go to his like little midi stuff. Like his turnaround jumpers were working for him. But to your point, only two more shots than Draymond Green. That's not good. And speaking of things you don't like,
and that's Draymond exactly Green. What I was going to say. Yeah. Yes, Draymond. I mean, I actually feel like, so you don't like the misses, of course. I mean, that goes without saying. You don't like the fouling out, all that stuff. But I actually feel like early in the game, there was a little bit of like, ooh, we get sort of like the throwback Draymond. Like he's doing the, you know, pound the ball into the hardwood in transition, you know, tank in the fast break type of Draymond stuff, turning back the clock a little bit, and that felt good. Five assists is nice, but it's also one of those things where it's like the reminder of like, this is maybe why Draymond stopped taking threes a few years ago. Like maybe the 0-4 is a reminder of like, you know, keep moving the ball, you know, reverse it, keep it moving, get some more shots for Klay, maybe not the four threes for yourself. It's a weird game to look at the box score for the Warriors and you're just like, yeah, they were not getting a lot of the stuff they probably wanted.
Yeah, I thought, you know, it was an interesting thing too when they started with Robert Williams on Andrew Wiggins, and when you you know, they were basically letting Draymond shoot from the perimeter, and it just their defensive strategy tonight just felt like, okay, like we know that Steph is going to do Steph things. But we're just not going to let these other guys beat us. We're not going to get beat with the backdoor cuts. We're not going to let all this other stuff happen. We're not going to let Draymond Green turn into this super playmaker in transition type guy. Like, we're just not going to let it happen. And for the most part, they didn't. And Steph is just like, this isn't the KD Warriors. This isn't even Klay Thompson in his prime anymore. Like, it kind of feels like if Steph doesn't get that other guy, it feels like this offense gets shut down, and that's been the huge value in Jordan Poole over these playoffs, is that so often he would be that other guy next to Steph, but tonight he just wasn't that. Do the Warriors have a Jordan Poole problem? Because he maybe just chalk it up to game one jitters, but we should spend more time on this because we sort of just breezed over it. He was bad tonight, Brennan. Yeah. He was bad. Defensively, he was going to be bad, and he's going to be bad in these playoffs. Like, he's just in this finals. He's going to be bad. That's just, he's not a good defender. And the Celtics just went out of their way to hunt him, and they were really successful in it. But offensively, he's got to give you something. I don't know. If he's not that guy, then I'm not really sure what he's doing out there.
The biggest thing for me with Poole is the four turnovers.
Yeah.
That's the area that you just can't have. Like, you know, Jason Tatum missed shots. The Celtics were okay. He's a much more important player. I'm not saying that Poole is the level of passer that Tatum is, but I do think, for the most part, Poole's gotten pretty good about getting his shots in the flow. And I thought that happened tonight for the most part. It's just when there isn't a shot in the half court for you, or, you know, when you kind of second guess yourself, or you're young and you don't know exactly what you're doing in a certain moment, it's like, okay, you can't make that a turnover. You absolutely can't do that. You can go 1 from 5 from deep. You can't turn the ball over 4 times, especially when, like you said, he's already going to be a little bit of a risk yeah. out there on defense. I kind of wonder, though, just looking at like what the Warriors could do, things that maybe adjustments for game two rotation-wise would just be, it feels like this might be a series where Kuminga could make a pretty big impact. You were talking about points in the paint. We were talking about just wing thinness
right.
in terms of the Warriors not having that athleticism to match some of the lineups that Boston can throw out there. It feels like Kuminga, I don't know who he guards. I was kind of trying to do the math in my head. Maybe you just steal him a couple minutes as a change of pace option for you when Looney's not in there. Maybe when Poole in a few of those bench minutes, whatever it might be, Kuminga feels like a wild card that you could throw in there. Turn some of those Poole threes into just, you know, attacks the basket, pick and roll stuff, things like that. Offensive yeah. rebounds, like you talked about. It just feels like he might be a better option if there is another game in this series where Poole is cold.
Yeah, it's kind of telling that Steve Kerr went with the veterans, right, for the most part. Like Otto Porter, Andre Iguodala, like those are the guys that he went to coming off the bench. And really, it was Iguodala was the only guy that was sort of that third guy off the bench was the question mark. I also wonder if Gary Payton II, he was available tonight, obviously didn't make an appearance, kind of feels like he's a little ways away. Like, I'm not even sure he's going to be ready by Sunday. He said he's got, like, a couple of more things to clear before he's really ready to play before the game tonight. But once he is available, I wonder if he sort of supplants Iguodala in the rotation. The Kuminga thing is interesting because I think from a physicality standpoint, you're absolutely right, and you can already see the way that this first game was played, you can kind of already picture Kuminga in that kind of fast-paced game, grabbing a rebound, going full court, and finishing with a dunk, right? Like, you can kind of see it. But at the same time, in the half court, it feels like Boston just moves the ball too well, and it might be a situation where Kuminga's just not ready defensively to keep up with how this series is going to be played. But I'm with you. There's going to be a point where Steve Kerr tries him. It's just going to happen. Yeah. It's a seven-game series. It's going to happen. So the other guys, I'm not really sure. Like, do you put Bielitsa in there to try to stretch him? It kind of feels like he's another one that's going to be attacked.
Moody?
It's just maybe Moses Moody shows some. I mean, he had nice moments against Dallas in the conference finals. Yeah, I think getting Gary Payton II back will give them another option that Steve Kerr feels good about. But depending on when that is, I do think that we're going to see some of these other things happen. All right, let's shift gears, talk a little bit more about the Celtics next, what we liked, what we didn't like, and what we expect them to carry over into game two on Sunday. That's coming up next. You're listening to Locked On NBA. Back here with Locked On NBA, I'm Wes Goldberg here with Brendan Kleen. We are talking about Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Celtics win 120-108. Let's shift gears, talk about Boston, what we liked, what we didn't like. Let's start with what we didn't like with them, because it feels like that's the harder question. Because I think there's a lot that Boston fans probably liked about this game.
Winning, first and foremost.
Right.
Yeah, to me, you know, what you don't like is Jason Tatum missing a bunch of shots.
Yeah.
You know, 3 of 17 for him from the field. I don't want to jump right into something I did like. I think he had about as good of a possible game being cold from the field as you could hope for from your best player with 13 assists as well. But
yeah,
you're not going to win a ton of game. Like, if they shoot a normal accuracy rate from three and Tatum is 3 of 17, like if they're 35% from deep with that mark from Tatum, they probably don't win the game, right?
Right.
Like the shooting saved them on a night when Tatum, their best player, just couldn't make. He was I felt like they were generating good offense, and he just was missing shots, and that's usually something that'll doom you. I think the other thing on a don't like standpoint, just to get that stuff out of the way, you probably want Grant Williams to do a little more for you on offense. Like, he's a guy who obviously was the hero of the day late in that Milwaukee series. He's been a huge role player for them all year. If he's playing 16 minutes, scoring 0 points consistently in this series, I think there's going to be some moments where that comes back to bite you. Like, the other guys made the threes. You're probably not getting 6 of 8 from Al Horford every single night. So Grant's going to need to do a little more, I think, going forward. That would probably be another negative.
I'm with you. But to stay on the Tatum thing, too, I mean, to go 3 of 17 for Jason Tatum, but your team still shoot almost 51% overall, that I'm going to go out on a limb and say that doesn't happen again in this series.
Any of that.
Yeah, Jason Tatum probably already played his worst game in the series. So maybe you can, if you're a Celtics fan, you're like, wow, we won with Tatum playing like garbage. And, you know, offensively, that's kind of a good thing. But I actually liked what he was doing defensively. I thought Tatum was really locked in defensively. From, like you mentioned, the 13 assists, only 2 turnovers, which is sort of my like for the Celtics, is they kept the turnovers relatively low. But Tatum missing point blank shots at the rim, missing turnaround jumpers, it kind of felt like he never really knew how he wanted to attack. Maybe that's just because he was missing from everywhere and he wasn't really sure what was working. But that's the biggest thing, is that you want more from Jason Tatum. And then with Robert Williams, I'll go to him too. Like, his whole game was sort of a like and a don't like, right? Like, there are sometimes he was coming out at the level of screen and you're like, all right, good job, Robert Williams, do that. And then sometimes he was just dropping back and just letting Steph walk into open threes. And you're like, don't like that, Robert Williams. Don't do that so much. And so, like, Robert Williams, he needs to sort of figure out exactly how he wants to play this. But I thought the Celtics defense overall, let's just go right into the likes. I thought the Celtics defense overall, oh, one more don't like. Peyton Pritchard looked completely lost on defense. And I think that could be a weak point if you're the Warriors. I know they're not a mismatch hunting team, but maybe do a little bit of that when Peyton Pritchard is on the court, because he didn't look like he knew any idea of what he had to do on offense.
Just
defense.
A huge flex by Udoka to play him 16 minutes. He's right. Like, yeah, we're going to do this on your home court and we're going to win. It's fine.
He's right there. And if you're Steph and you're Draymond and you're on the court and Peyton Pritchard's on the other team, just run a pick and roll. Just run a pick and roll at him. Get whoever his man is.
They did in this game. They ran pick and roll a couple times. They did that.
It's the finals. It's like, just, this is when Steve Kerr has historically broken out the pick and roll like that at a higher frequency. It's very easy to pull Peyton Pritchard's man up into a screen and just do that. So maybe you see a little bit more of that in game two. As far as the likes for the Celtics, the turnovers is my main bellwether that I'm watching for them. It was the thing that sunk them in their losses to the Heat in the conference finals, was when they turned the ball over. Only 4 for Jaylen Brown, which feels like a win these days from the turnover perspective, and only a couple across the board for their other big ball handlers. But the other one, too, is Derek White. 32 minutes, 21 points, 5 of 8 from three-point range. Big bucket after big bucket, especially in that fourth quarter. I mean, if you're getting that from Derek White off the bench, and Derek White's also one of these guys, it's like sometimes he's there, sometimes he doesn't show up. But if you're getting that, and Jordan Poole can't do anything on the other end, that's a really big win for your bench.
Yeah, the Warriors, I think, need to, I don't know, I don't want to get into anything too scientific and grotesque here, but the Warriors need to start scouting if their potential finals opponents might have a future father on the team, because they got burned by Fred VanVleet in 2019. It feels like we're headed there again. I'm not sure if there's anything that can be done. I don't want to advocate for anything too bad, but let's get that figured out. I think the confidence from White has been awesome to see. I mean, just as a neutral observer, my team got smashed to smithereens 2 rounds ago, so I don't have a horse in this race. So it's just cool to see somebody like White really, like, he was also, by the end of the game, was attacking closeouts, and it just felt like he was kind of at the peak of his powers. I mean, I don't know if he has a game like this where he gets into rhythm to quite this extent, but either way, I think he's comfortable. And if Udoka trusts that, that unlocks that small lineup for them in a really big way. I think you have, so this was my big, I mean, the thing I was thinking about with Boston coming in, you mentioned Jaylen Brown. You have to give him his flowers. The box score is not super pretty with the 5-4 assists to turnover, 10 of 23 from the field. Like, you know, plus 22 looks really nice, but other than that, the box score kind of shows a mediocre game, and I think he was pretty strong, especially considering the importance of him in that fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. This team is just so crazy. Like, the fact that we're talking about them as a potential champion in the league, and they have one all-star. You know what I mean? Like, I think you have to give some credit to Jaylen Brown for carrying the weight of a second-best player in a role for him that feels pretty unique in the NBA. Like, for him to be a second banana on a title team, or even a game that now has won one game in the finals, is just very, very unique. I mean, yeah, it's unorthodox. It's not how these teams usually operate. So I feel like, you know, the fourth quarter for him, but also just doing this on this stage, holding up like he has. I guess tonight it might have been Al Horford who was their best player, but Brown is, I mean, he's holding up. He's doing his thing, and it was good to see.
Jaylen Brown's physicality in this game I thought was really apparent too, right, on both ends. But 7 rebounds was a team high. Those were all very important rebounds when you don't have like a single guy who dominates the glass that way.
Boston shot 88% at the basket. I think Brown had a few of those. That's an insane number.
You used the word comfort earlier, and I think that's an interesting way to phrase what Boston was. I mean, so much was made of the fact that Golden State had 120 something games in the finals between them on that roster, and Boston had zero. But it didn't feel that way, right? It felt that way early, but then for the most of the game, it didn't really feel that way, especially in that fourth quarter. Jaylen Brown looks very comfortable sort of stepping into that role. When Jason Tatum clearly doesn't have it going, Tatum is obviously the number one option on that team, and I think Jaylen Brown has admitted he's okay with that, right? But when Tatum doesn't have it going, he seems really comfortable and being like, all right, it's on me. I got this. I'll do this. Mm-hmm. I'll put up 23 shots for 24 points, but at least I'll put up 23 shots in the finals, which I've never played in, right? And that means something. And then Derek White, like, I don't know what the odds on Derek White looking more comfortable in the finals than Jordan Poole was, but like, that was a little surprising to me. And that doesn't mean that Jordan Poole is going to look like a fish out of water. I don't think that that's going to be. I think that Jordan Poole in game two will be much better than Jordan Poole in game one. There is an irrational confidence to his game that I expected to be there in game one, not from Derek White though, and we got that. And like, Al Horford, I know that he's never played in the finals, but that dude's played in the NBA for a really long time. Marcus Smart, ditto for him. Smart and Horford looked like they knew exactly how to play in the NBA Finals, and that's why I didn't really care about that Finals experience and that number that I mentioned before. It's a fun graphic for ESPN to throw up on their broadcast, but it didn't matter to me because it's not like this was a group of... This wasn't the Memphis Grizzlies, right? With no playoff experience. This is a team that has gone deep, gone to the conference finals several times, had long postseason runs, and they have veterans who have been around and played a lot of NBA games, and they looked much more comfortable than I think a lot of people expected in the finals. And if we're just going to end this on one last takeaway, this is going to be a really good series, Brendan.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's a very cool kind of clash of styles, but also rosters that are similar, and it lived up to the billing. I think people were pretty thrilled, and you know, six games, everybody felt like it was going to be long no matter who you were picking. Game one, like 12 point game, doesn't actually really describe what happened. This was very, very close throughout, and it paid off. It's cool to have the road team win game one and just throw things into flux, and I'm excited for the rest.
That's a wrap for us. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA wherever you listen to podcasts for 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day. You can find me over at Locked On Heat and Brendan over on Locked On Suns. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Have a great weekend, everybody.